Titikshava Karunika Suridapsarva Dehinam Ajata Shatravakshanta Saravaksadhu Bhushana Titikshava Karunika Suridapsarva Dehinam Ajata Shatravakshanta Saravaksadhu Bhushana Titikshavaha Tolerant Karunika Merciful Suridaha Friendly Sarvadehina To all living entities Ajata Shatravaha Inimical to none. Shanta. Peaceful. Sadavaha. Abiding by scriptures. Sarubhushana. Adorned with sublime characteristics. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. Purport. A sadhu, as described above, is a devotee of the Lord. His concern, therefore, is to enlighten people in devotional service to the Lord. That is his mercy. He knows that without devotional service to the Lord, human life is spoiled. A devotee travels all over the country from door to door, preaching, be Krishna conscious. Be a devotee of Lord Krishna. Don't spoil your life in simply fulfilling your animal propensities. Human life is meant for self-realization or Krishna consciousness. These are the preachings of a sadhu. He is not satisfied with his own liberation. He always thinks about others. He is the most compassionate personality toward all the fallen souls. One of his qualifications, therefore, is Karuniko, great mercy to the fallen souls. While engaged in preaching work, he has to meet with so many opposing elements. And therefore the sadhu or devotee of the Lord has to be very tolerant. Some may ill-treat him because of the conditioned souls are not prepared to receive the transcendental knowledge of devotional service. They do not like it. That is their disease. The sadhu has the thankless task of impressing upon them the importance of devotional service. Sometimes devotees are personally attacked with violence. Lord Jesus Christ was crucified. Haridas Thakur was caned in 22 marketplaces. And Lord Chaitanya's principal assistant, Nityananda, was violently attacked by Jagai and Madhai. But still they were tolerant because their mission was to deliver the fallen souls. One of the qualifications of a sadhu is that he is very tolerant and is merciful to all fallen souls. He is merciful because he is the well-wisher of all living entities. He is not only a well-wisher of human society, but a well-wisher of animal society as well. It is said here, Sarvadehinam, which indicates all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Not only does the human being have a material body, but other living entities, such as cats and dogs, also have material bodies. The devotee of the Lord is merciful to everyone, the cats, dogs, trees, etc. He treats all living entities in such a way that they can ultimately get salvation from this material entanglement. Shivananda Sena, one of the disciples of Lord Chaitanya, gave liberation to a dog by treating the dog transcendentally. There are many instances where a dog got salvation by association with a sadhu, because a sadhu engages in the highest philanthropic activities for the benediction of all living entities. Yet although a sadhu is not inimical toward anyone, the world is so ungrateful that even a sadhu has many enemies. What is the difference between an enemy and a friend? It is a difference in behavior. A sadhu behaves with all conditioned souls for their ultimate relief from material entanglement. Therefore, no one can be more friendly than a sadhu in relieving a conditioned soul. A sadhu is calm, and he quietly and peacefully follows the principles of Scripture. A sadhu means one who follows the principles of Scripture and at the same time is a devotee of the Lord. One who actually follows the principles of Scripture must be a devotee of God, because all the Shastras instruct us to obey the orders of the personality of Godhead. Sadhu therefore means a follower of the scriptural injunctions and a devotee of the Lord. All these characteristics are prominent in a devotee. A devotee develops all the good qualities of the demigods, whereas a non-devotee, even though academically qualified, has no good qualification or good characteristics according to the standard of transcendental realization. Titikshava Karunika Sudidak Sarva Dehinam Ajata Shatravakshanta Sadavaksaru Bhushanaha. A favorite verse of Srila Prabhupada, he'd like to quote it often. Here Kapiladev is just beginning his instructions, and he's talking in some general terms. He has not, in the words that he's speaking, he has not yet identified these sadhus as devotees. Although he will in the next verse, the very next verse. He's just delaying for maybe dramatic effect the fact that the sadhus are devotees. Then he says in the next verse, Mayanandina bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridam. Yay. Those who. The who refers back to the same sadhus, obviously. Those sadhus who, with undeviating, exclusive love, perform devotion, firm devotional service for me. That has to be not only Vaishnavas, but pure Vaishnavas. Those with mixed motives who are superficially performing devotional service but have many material ideas and plans, they don't have Ananya Bhava. Their Bhava is a little bit for Krishna and a lot for Maya. Their love, their attachment is as much to Maya or more as it is to Krishna. Therefore, they're mixed devotees. And they don't do solid devotional service. They're doing, semi-solid, liquid, gaseous, ephemeral devotional service. Not quite the real solid thing. They're doing something for Krishna. And they got some sentiment for Krishna. But it's not pure, it's not solid. It's not unalloyed. Unalloyed. I'm wearing a ring that's supposed to be gold. My mother bought it when I got married. She spent $20 and it's only 10 carat. In India, it's called brass in India. 10 carat gold. It's less than 50% gold. What kind of gold is that? That's alloy, mixed with other metals, mixed to the point that it's useless. Worthless. No jeweler in India would even bother to buy this from me. Wouldn't give me 10 rupees for it. Unalloyed means unmixed, pure. The real thing. If you have a gold coin, it's supposed to be 99.9% pure gold. Otherwise, it's not legal tender. Otherwise, it's counterfeit. Even 20 karat gold is not legal tender. Gold bullion has to be 24 karat pure gold. Unalloyed. There's use for the unalloyed. Okay, when you're making gold jewelry, you have to alloy it because gold in its original form is too soft. It'll break. If you want a ring jewelry that will not break, you make 22 or 20 karat gold. It's a little bit alloyed. But there is purpose for the pure gold. When you're using gold as money, bricks of gold, or coins made out of gold, you want the pure thing, unalloyed. If you want to actually do business with Krishna, you have to have the legal currency, unalloyed devotional service. You can find some other purpose for mixed devotional service, especially if you're dealing with other people than Krishna, and you want to use Krishna as your business partner. Yeah. Then you can deal in alloyed devotional service, mixed, with thank you, karma and jnana, how do you want? But if you want to deal with Krishna as pure devotees, you have to be, your devotion has to be pure. You want to deal with pure devotees, you have to use the legal currency. You may not be pure in your heart, you may not be skillful in how to behave purely, but somehow or other we have to use the legal currency of exchange. We have to practice pure devotional service, even though we're not pure. That is the program of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is the program of Rupa Goswami. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavitam anukulyena krishnanushilanam. That is Rupa Goswami's general definition of uttama bhakti, or pure devotion. And he explains how even the conditioned souls can practice that pure devotion. They, even with material desires, even with bad past behavior, bad conditioning from one's previous life, now trying to begin the practice, you can perform pure devotional service if you follow the rules and understand the philosophy. Do what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees advise us to do, and understand things the way they advise us to understand them. Put aside what everybody else taught you, including all the other so-called sadhus. Including all the other sadhus. The word sadhu is misused in the modern age to apply to anybody who's run away from his family and put on saffron. Or even they don't have to wear it around here. They wear red, they wear black, they wear white, they can be, you know, any color. And you call yourself a sadhu. And you can have a family. Dump your old family and pick up some widow. And you can be called a sadhu. You know? And you can spout any kind of garbage. You can talk any kind of nonsense, as long as it sounds good. And people will accept it as transcendental philosophy. That's the extreme end of the bogus sadhus. But in the spectrum of complete nonsense and pure devotees, there's a continuum in between of mixed devotees. Those who are not complete frauds, but they've been associating with frauds. They've been listening to people who are not honest. And therefore their honesty is suspect. They may be, you know, the mixed, the ones in the middle are practicing devotional service, but they've been influenced by Mayavadis, by Sahajas, plain old materialists. They've listened to the wrong people and gotten picked up bad ideas and bad habits, just like thinking that it's okay, you know, to smoke biddies or bomb, and practice the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the same time. There are alcoholics in Calcutta, there are plenty, who consider themselves devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they were visiting the homes of the grihasthas in Navadvip, they were very liberal. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas, he was very strict. He would not eat in the house of one who is not a pure devotee, and we would generally only eat in the houses of brahmanas, with the exceptions of maybe Chandrasekhar and some of his intimate devotees. He was strict, especially as a sannyasi. He was very strict. In fact, he would not eat in the house of someone who was not a lakpati. Lakpati. Back then, a lakh was a lot of money. Nowadays, even every beggar has got a lakh stuffed away in his mattress. That's nothing. 100,000 rupees nowadays is not much money. It used to be a fortune. And a lakhpati was a rich man. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he said he would not eat in the house of someone who is not a lakhpati, he meant someone who didn't chant a lakh of Harinam every day. He was strict. But when he was in Navadvip, and the Navadvip Vasis, the Dham Vasis, are all his devotees, even though their behavior may be look otherwise. So he and Nityananda would freely wander town and visit anybody and everybody. The cobblers, the Muslims, anybody. One day, they wandered into the house of a fallen sannyasi. Someone who was a tantric sannyasi. And they went to visit him anyway, to give him some mercy. And they were having, talks with him. And that sannyasi, this tantric, said, "Would you like some ananda?" Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, of course. This is what we're seeking after, ananda." But Nityananda, he had been traveling as a sannyasi, as a avaduta. He knew the jargon. He knew what this meant, that he was offering him some liquor, sharab. So Nityananda Prabhu whispered into Mahaprabhu's ear, "You know what he's asking? He's asking, do you want to drink some wine?" And Mahaprabhu was shocked. He immediately jumped out the window. And the two of them ran away. But he was merciful. At least they visited that person's house and gave them his mercy, but they wouldn't stay for the refreshments. Anyway, this is not real sadhu. This is, Mahaprabhu had to deal with this, so-called sadhus. He also had to deal with so-called brahmanas. When he went to Gaya, he was warned. It's like we should all be warned if we go to Gaya or similar places. The pandas are very heavy. They won't let you get away without giving them a lot of money. How did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu handle this? He was a grihastha. He had maybe some money, but what he did was he charmed them with his sweet words. He pleased them with his words and didn't give them any money. He managed, by being nice to them, to avoid giving them any money. So he had to deal with that also, materialistic brahmins, fallen sannyasis, so-called sadhus. But therefore we have to understand who is a real sadhu. When Kapila Deva is talking generally in this verse about sadhu, and you may have your vague or innocent idea who you think a sadhu is, that there are so many sadhus and we should consider them all great. But Kapila Deva himself, in the next few verses, is going to clarify who is a real sadhu. In fact, even this verse: find someone who is actually compassionate, actually tolerant, actually a friend of everybody, then you can call him a sadhu. Test the tolerance. Because we shouldn't go around. This is not the proper way to approach a sadhu. Some do this. Test him. Give him a hard time. Try to trip him. Make him trip. Get angry at you. Or try to make him say something or do some nonsense. And then that's not respectful. Don't go to a saintly person and try to make him look bad as a test. That's offensive. We shouldn't even deal with Mayavadis like that. We should be respectful. So no, not like that, but there are other ways to test without trying to make someone look bad. You can examine their behavior, their character, what they say. Yeah, and privately, in your own mind, you can make a judgment. Is he really fit this definition? Is he compassionate or is he just exploitative and ambitious? Well, they're collecting disciples. These Mayavadis and even the tantrics, they're collecting many disciples. But what, for what purpose? Because the disciples give them money. And their ladies' disciples have sex with them. You know, that's not compassion, that's exploitation. So, you have to look and be intelligent. Is your so-called sadhu actually compassionate? Is he sacrificing his life for the benefit of others, or is he using other people for his benefit? That's not compassion, that's exploitation. Friend of all living entities, including the innocent creature. So if he's a meat eater, then he's not compassionate. If he's expounding nonsense philosophy, then he's doing violence to his disciples. He's not the friend of his own disciples. If he teaches them something erroneous. So, is he a really friend of all the living entities? Is he peaceful? Is he tolerant? Does he actually have no enemies? If he finds fault with so many others, unnecessarily, a preacher has to find fault. That's his duty. Just like a surgeon has to cut you with a knife. But not that he just attacks you on the street and stabs you. That's not a surgeon. That's a thief and an attempted murderer. A surgeon cuts you in a special way, therapeutically. Whereas a daku cuts you in a criminal way. There's a difference. So a preacher, a devotee engaged in preaching, may cut your false ego with his sharp words, but he's doing it therapeutically for your good. And he does it under anesthetic. Just like the surgeon nowadays, that we're living in the 21st century, surgery is relatively painless in many cases. I had my eye operated on. They didn't even give me an injection. They squirted, you know, one drop of something in my eye and then went ahead and cut. It didn't hurt. They have the technology to make the surgery relatively painless. If they have to, they put you to sleep, but they do it. It used to be they didn't have the anesthetics, and they had to tie you down and you know, make you drink a bottle of whiskey before they started cutting, and try to cut real fast because it hurts a lot. That's the way surgery used to be. But now they have anesthetics. So a preacher, although he's cutting sharp, he also gives the patient anesthetic. He leaves the patient satisfied. You say so many harsh things, but you don't say it in a harsh way. You say it in such a way that the person is happy to be criticized. Just like when Srila Prabhupada first visited his guru criticized. You know, why don't you? What are you doing? You know, with your, he didn't say in these words, but you know, he implied, you're involved in all this politics with your Gandhi movement, why don't you just preach the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? That was the, he didn't say that, but that's what he meant by it. What you're doing is wrong, you should change your behavior, your life. Stop this politics and devote your life to preaching. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in effect told Prabhupada. And Prabhupada tried to argue with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that as long as India is still a dependent country, no one will listen to the message of your Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati defeated him. Cut him down, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said that he felt happy. He was satisfied to be defeated like that. That's successful preaching. When you cut someone's ego to pieces and he's grateful for it, he's satisfied. But if you anger the person, that's not effective preaching. He won't accept the message, and you've made an enemy at the same time. So ajatashatru book. The real sadhus are supposed to not have any enemies. They don't make enemies, even though they're criticizing. Shanta, they're peaceful. And some who didn't understand were shocked when they saw how angry Srila Prabhupada could get at people. At people he never met before. But he would sometimes, a person who came apparently with good intentions to hear from Prabhupada, sometimes Prabhupada saw in them hypocrisy. And strangers. He was harsh with some of his disciples, training them up, especially his serious disciples. He would be very heavy with them, and sometimes chastise them for hours until they were terrified, even big sannyasis. So what kind of peacefulness is that? And then strangers who came to take his darshan, when he saw that this person has got hypocritical ideas, he would cut them apart sometimes. Sometimes with Cardinal Danilu, Prabhupada would not agree to have a friendly discussion with him. He simply found fault in this man and criticized him for being a mediator and so on, and would not agree to have a discussion of philosophy with him. He just attacked him mercilessly. But then a month later, the same Cardinal Danilu was discovered dead in a brothel. So Prabhupada saw through the man and tried to save him. So that's Shanta. Prabhupada could be vicious in his criticisms, but he was still perfectly peaceful. He wasn't disturbed, he was doing the necessary. Just like the doctor has to do therapeutic violence. The anger of a Vaishnava is the expression of his compassion, and it doesn't mean that he's not peaceful. Just like a real Kshatriya can kill with a peaceful frame of mind. Of course, you get angry in battle. That is there. But basically, the Kshatriya is doing his duty, and he's not doesn't lose his wits even while he's killing. So a preacher, a real sadhu, is within satisfied and peaceful even if he's showing anger, even if he's sharply criticizing. Materialist gets angry, you've hurt his pride, and then he attacks you like a snake that you step on. But a sadhu may sound like he's attacking you, but he's not attacking you to destroy you. He's not attacking you because he's upset. He's doing it simply to help you. That's a real sadhu. Sadhava sadhu bhushana. So who can fit this definition? Prabhupada, in the very first sentence, makes his point, his statement of his thesis, that a sadhu as described above is a devotee of the Lord. Period. No one else can be a real sadhu. Not according to this definition of having all these characteristics. Only a pure Vaishnava can live up to this standard. Yashyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana. Someone who has unalloyed devotion for Krishna, he has all the good qualities that the demigods possess. The demigods are well known to be exalted personalities. They've got many good qualities, but a pure Vaishnava has all those qualities and more. And someone who is not a Vaishnava, harava bhaktasya, krito mahagana, forget it. You will not find such good qualities in anyone who is not a pure devotee. Or at least who is not a devotee at all. The non-devotees cannot be sadhus. The practicing devotees are sadhus in practice. They're aspiring sadhus. The non-devotees are not sadhus at all, no matter how they're dressed and how they're respected by others. Whatever good qualities they have are a superficial show. They don't have kuto mahadguna. What good qualities do they actually have? Does anybody remember who spoke that first? Where it is? Fourth canon? Spoken by Prahlad, I think. I think Prahlad speaks it in his prayer to Nrsimhadev. Prahlad is living on one of the varshas in Jambudvip. Anyway, he spoke this verse. He knows who's a sadhu. Prahlad is an expert on who's a sadhu and who isn't. And his father was the opposite of a sadhu, the exact opposite. So he knew what's a sadhu and what's not. Father was a son of a sage, of a rishi, son of Vaishrava. No, that's Ravana, isn't it? Hirani Kashyapu, no, not Hirani Kashyapu. Ravana, forget that. Anyway, why can only a Vaishnava be compassionate, be actually peaceful, and not have any enemies? Because only a Vaishnava is actually satisfied and happy. Everyone else is dissatisfied. No matter what they're pretending to be, they're not actually satisfied and happy. You can't be peaceful if you're not happy. If you don't have what you want. If you don't have what you want, you're dissatisfied. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it, as recorded by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj, Mukti Mukti Shri Kami Shokali Ashanta Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ota Eva Shanta. The yogis, the gyanis, and the karmis all have ulterior motives, material motives. They want bhakti, the karmis. They want material enjoyment. Mukti, or the gyanis, they want liberation. Siddhi, the yogis, they want siddhis, powers. The tantrics, usually, their motive is control, power over others. The tantrics are usually recruited among people who were powerless, disenfranchised, low-class people who were not accepted by society as anybody important. They could become important by learning the arts of tantra. Then they could make other people fearful of them and respect them because they have those tantric powers. And they give up sex, they give up sense gratification in order to get that power through the practice of tantra. That's generally the motive of the tantrics. Siddhi kami, yogis who want to have power. Sakali, shokali, ashanta. All three of these kinds of people, they're not peaceful because they're not satisfied. Krishna bhakta nishkama, a real devotee of Krishna, has no material desires. His desire is only to please Krishna and take pleasure in that. No material ambition for bhakti, mukti, or siddhi. Ata eva shanta, therefore he is peaceful. And the others cannot be peaceful. How will you learn peace from someone who is not peaceful? What's the use of associating with the sadhus who are not up to the standard? They're not satisfied. How can you become satisfied by taking their advice? You want to become healthy, go to a healthy person. If the doctor is sick, how can he make you healthy? So the real sadhus, they have to, first of all, be titikshava, karunika, sudhidav sarva dehina. Tolerant is the first qualification. If we want to come into this standard, really, we have to become tolerant. We have to tolerate, first of all, one another. We're living in the association of devotees. We're different people, and we all have our faults. We all have our weaknesses. And we, as conditioned souls, we tend to fight with one another. We have to, husband and wife, Rasta couple in Krishna consciousness, they may have quarrels all the time. They may have disagreements. Their personalities may not match 100%. Maybe there was a mistake in the astrological check. And actually they're only 3% compatible, not 93%. You know, actually a devotee astrologer would advise above 85% is not good. Too compatible would make a mundane relationship. But there should be compatibility. 60 to 85% compatible according to all the matching up of the different planets. You know, there are techniques, there are books written on compatibility analysis. You match up the two jatakas. So maybe a mistake was made and the husband and wife have been married for 20 years and they're just not compatible. But if they're serious devotees, they tolerate. If they can't tolerate, they're in trouble. So the first art an aspiring sadhu, aspiring devotee has to learn is tolerance. Tolerate one another, and then tolerate everybody. If we're just angry and hateful of all the stupid people in the world, then we'll be disturbed. We won't be satisfied. We have to, in order to be peaceful, in order to feel any real compassion, we have to tolerate. If I can only condemn people and hate them, what kind of compassion will I feel for them? And if I can't feel that for my own God brothers, how can I feel it for the others who need help? I won't be able to help them. I'll remain a neophyte if I remain angry and intolerant. So we have to give up intolerance, you know, that creates anger and frustration and hatred. We can't be compassionate to people that we hate. And if we hate our own God brothers, then we can't do anything for anybody. So Tatikshava, first of all. And then we can think about being compassionate, being everybody's friend, not having any enemies. And then we can call ourselves peaceful. So there's a lot, a big program. This is like, you know, just can keep someone busy for 30 years, trying to just come up to the standard of this verse. And then he describes more. The next verse is another 30 years work, is to become completely absorbed in remembering Krishna. So expect, you know, maybe 60 years, you know, sadhana here. Maybe you can do an intense program and get it done in less time, but you can expect it might take 60 years, 30 years to become peaceful and 30 years to actually absorb yourself in Krishna. It's hard work. It can take a long time. We may not finish it in this lifetime, possibly. Mama janmani janmani shvare. All we're asking is, Krishna, please, birth after birth, let me be in the association of your pure devotees. Okay. Any questions or comments? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.